You are listening to KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. It was June 30th, 2013. The Yarnell Hill fire, which had been sparked by lightning, grew out of control and trapped 19 Granite Mountain hotshots from Prescott. Efforts were made to drop retardant to give them some kind of cover from the flames, but those efforts were ultimately unsuccessful, and the 19 men were killed. One member of the hotshots survived. Brendan McDonough was serving as the lookout in a separate location, but he heard the communications between his colleagues and others above the fire and heard when they stopped. McDonough writes about what happened that day and what led to him becoming a firefighter, following years of drug use and partying as a teenager. The new book is called My Lost Brothers, and he'll be appearing at Changing Hands Bookstore in Tempe next Tuesday night, and he joins me. Brendan, you write a lot about moving as a kid in California, not knowing your dad well. You used and sold drugs as a teen in Prescott. What got you interested in becoming a firefighter and moving away from that kind of lifestyle?
So I think it started when I was about 14, 15, and my mom had kind of noticed like that I needed to be doing something productive, and she probably, I can't speak for my mother, but what I would think was, hey, he doesn't have a male role model. So how do I get him a male role model? And I think the Fire Explorers program that I went through, I think that was a way to give me a male role model and a career choice. And so as I learned more about firefighting, it seemed like I got worse with the drugs, which doesn't make any sense, to be honest. And I can't explain it myself either. I really can't. But as I learned more about firefighting, the more involved I became with it, but then also this almost double life to where I really wanted to be a firefighter, but I just could not let go of partying, you know. And as you get older, you're exposed to more things. In high school, I was just very open, you know, to trying new things and doing things, and I didn't frown upon them too much.
So when did it first start to be something that you thought you could do?
I think straight out of high school, my mom helped me get enrolled into the Structure Academy that I went to first, and the class fills up like within an hour or two at midnight, and so we're waiting and we fill it all out, and I was still 17, so my mom had to sign a waiver so I can even do the class. And so that was kind of where my introduction to firefighting began. And one of the older gentlemen in the class, he's part of a IC structure system, and he kind of just was like, hey, you know, if you really want a good foot in the door for structure, this is where you start out. You start out of wildland. This is, you know, people know if you're a hotshot that you worked hard, that you put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in your job, and that's how you build a name for yourself, a reputation. Or you can, you know, go sit and be a part of the EMS world. And he wasn't bagging on the structure guys at all, but I mean, a lot of what they do is EMS, and I think there's only a handful of departments that are strictly fire, and I know one of them's New York City. And that's the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So, and it's just, that sparked my interest, those words that he said about, you know, getting to travel the country and getting to fight fire and have a career also is very intriguing. I didn't get to travel much as a kid. We moved around a little bit, but it was in the same county. I was going to the same school, so it was just not a change of scenery.
Yeah.
But this job was like, oh man, I get a Montana, Idaho, Minnesota, you know, New Mexico, Utah, California, Washington, all over the Southwest.
This, to a lot of people, sounds like, well, you're protecting people, you're protecting homes, you're protecting areas, and yet at the same time, you're putting potentially your life at risk, potentially.
Mm-hmm. It was more of wanting to serve. I looked at firefighting as closing the door to everything I'd done before, like the drugs and the partying. That was kind of, you know, once this begins, this is my new life, this is my new purpose. And so as much as it doesn't make sense why I did it, that's kind of, I guess, my thought process when I was, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old.
Yeah. So what was your experience with firefighting before the tragic Yarnell Hill stuff? How many fires had you actually been on? Did you feel like it was the right choice?
Two and a half years I was with Granite Mountain Hotshots, and that was my first fire job. And I really do feel like it was the right choice in the beginning. And the only reason why I say in the beginning is because of the impact it had on my daughter being gone all summer. And a lot of people, they think, well, you know, the mom's there. The mom's there to tell you about, you know, the dad. And me and my daughter's mother were split. So sometimes when I came home and if it wasn't my time to have her, I didn't get to have her unless it was, you know, my 2 days off. And so that I could go out to another fire, wouldn't see her for a month. And it's actually a conversation that I had with my superintendent and captain the beginning of 2013, the year of the tragedy, was I want to fulfill this season and I want to continue to grow and maybe even one more season, but I think I need to start looking at something a little more stable for being a single dad so I could be home more for my daughter.
Did you worry when you were fighting fires? Was that something that, did you worry about yourself? Did you worry about what would happen to your daughter if something happened to you?
It was always in the back of my head, but it was something, I guess it's something that at that young age I couldn't understand and I wanted to keep back there. So it wasn't like we talked a lot about, and it was, I knew the dangers of the job. And even throughout the seasons that I did, the 2.5 seasons I did work, you know, the short time I did work, we'd hear about fatalities. We'd be on a fire and we'd hear about a fatality and we'd take a moment and pray for, you know, their family and we'd, you know, take a moment for them. And so it made it real. When you're out on the line and you get word of something, you know, in the middle of the day or at night or in the morning, it just made it that much more real. And it was an eye-opener to the dangers of the job.
It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix talking with Brendan McDonough. He's the author of the new book, My Lost Brothers. It's the untold story by the Yarnell Hill Fire's lone survivor. He'll be at Changing Hands Bookstore coming up on Tuesday, May the 10th. So, Brendan, that particular horrible afternoon when your colleagues died in this fire, can you tell us a little bit about what it felt like to be overhearing what was going on? Because there was a particular plan in place to make sure that there was a wall set up to protect your colleagues, and then the fire acted in a way that no one expected.
In Yarnell, when I had heard that, you know, my brothers are deploying their fire shelters, it's never something you want to hear. And it truly just put mentally, physically, my whole personal being into shock. And I didn't know what to think, how to think, how to feel. And it was, it took weeks to come out of that shock. It took a long time to really come out of it. And it took even longer to really understand what happened. So going back to that, a lot of fear, trying to be hopeful, you know, praying to God, survivor's guilt, you know, one of the first things that came to my mind, you know, why am I not with them? Why am I here? Why am I not there? Why isn't someone here? Why am I the person here? So there's just a lot of things just continue to rush through my mind. And all while this is going on, you know, there's 100 plus or so people trying to get to them, trying to get a plan going for medical, for evacuation. So all this is going on, and I think that's one thing that a lot of people haven't heard about is the courage that my brothers had that day, but the men and women on that scene that came together for the purpose, and you can't, I can't even put it into words, you know, how much willing they were to go the extra mile for their brothers.
There were reports after that happened, and there was speculation about whether there was anything that could have been done to prevent it. Looking back at it, was this nature? Was planning wrong? Did firefighters make any mistakes? Or was this just sort of something that got out of control?
I mean, that's a million-dollar question, to be honest. And looking back, what I can tell you is I don't feel that there's enough information out there for me to be able to make a sound decision. I feel like there's more than just one decision that led up to what happened, or one mistake that led up to what happened, or, you know, the fact that it's a natural disaster in itself and we're fighting it, that's huge on its own. And is it the training, or is it the resources, is it the tools, is it the technology? I think it's a combination of a lot of things that lined up that day. I don't look to blame anybody about it. I just hope that we can learn from it. And I know that there are people that are continuing to look into that tragedy so we can find out new things about what happened to, on one end, continue to honor my brothers, and on another end, which is very tough to swallow, find out if they made mistakes and which ones they did make. But it needs to be known if there was something done wrong for the future of wildland firefighters.
You mentioned it took a few weeks for you after the incident. But also, I mean, I'm sure you've had some form of PTSD, and there's no question that has to happen after something like that.
Yeah.
How do you prevent the nightmares? How do you look ahead? How do you make it so, not just for yourself, but also, let's say, the firefighting community, for your daughter? How do you remember that in a productive way and then move ahead?
It took me a while to figure that out. And I'm still learning it. And what has helped me the most is the counseling that I went through in writing this book at the same time. Because the counseling, what it did is it allowed me to face, once I was comfortable, it allowed me to face anything that was held within. And with that in itself, it's not going to stop the nightmares. It's not going to stop the anxiety, you know, the symptoms of PTS. It's not going to completely get rid of it. But it's going to make it a lot easier to live with. And talking about things like the growth that the community has and will continue to have, you know, the wildland firefighting community and the knowledge they'll continue to grow, that gives me hope. The fact that I'm able to sit here and talk about getting help and the kind of treatment that I had, and I'm able to write about it in hopes of other people understanding that it's okay to get help and that you do have to be vulnerable to some pain. I mean, that I talk about my counseling and I try not make it sound too painful, but it was. I mean, I relived every single moment that I didn't want to talk about, and it brought it all up. And I was fortunate in ways to be able to do that with the book, because now I can look back and I can truly look back and I can say to myself, I don't think there's one thing that I didn't confront that I wanted to.
Brendan McDonough, the new book is called My Lost Brothers, The Untold Story by the Yarnell Hill Fire's Lone Survivor. He'll be at Changing Hands Bookstore on Tuesday, May the 10th. Brendan, thanks for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.